Welcome to Island Crimes and Mysteries. And now, it's time to join your host, Nules, for another episode.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started on today's story.
Now, before we get started on today's episode, I'd like to say a big thank you to my newest Patreon members, Kian Burke, Maria Ambergy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Maria. If I'm not, I do apologise. Janet Roach, Megan Finlay Horowitz, and Catherine Kingston. Welcome to our little community and thank you so much for supporting the podcast. Okay, without further ado, let's get back to today's episode. Today's case takes us to Rathgar in County Dublin. Rathgar is a suburb on the south side of Dublin City. A highly sought-after area, it is approximately 3 kilometres from the city centre. Now we're heading back to the summer of 1993, when Albert Reynolds was Taoiseach. The first ever meeting had taken place between the Irish head of state Mary Robinson and the British monarch Queen Elizabeth II in Buckingham Palace. The Dáil had also passed the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act, decriminalising gay relationships. Niamh Cavanagh had won the Eurovision for Ireland, and The Snapper was the film that we were all talking about. And so it is that in Rathgar, we find a girl named Eva Brennan on the 25th of July, 1993. Now that day itself was a fairly mundane day, weather-wise, with temperatures around 18 degrees. But it was a sunny day. But this mundane day would turn into a day that the Brennan family would never forget. You see, Eva Brennan was 39 years old when she was reported missing only 3 short months after Annie McCarrick, whom I've covered in a previous podcast. Eva was born on the 4th of August 1953 and was only a few short weeks away from turning 40, although it was said that she looked much younger than her age. Some would even say she looked 10 years younger. Eva was one of 7 children born to her parents, Davy and Eileen Brennan, and the third eldest, having 2 sisters and 4 brothers. Her father, Davy, was a publican and owned 2 pubs in Dublin, the Horse and Hound in Cabinteely and the 108 in Rathgar. He also owned racehorses. The Brennans, by all accounts, were very comfortable, and her father was very good to look after his children financially, with Eva's brothers continuing in the family business of the pub trade, while the sisters and Eva did not have a full-time job, but their father was their sole provider. Eva was a devout Catholic and was very involved in her local church, St. Joseph's Church in Terenure, and was part of a local Legion of Mary prayer group. She had a small circle of friends. Eva was known to lead a quiet life. She liked routine and was known to be a creature of habit. She did like her style and loved shopping for new outfits, and also loved to go dancing with her friends. In 1990, when Eva was 36 years of age, with some help from her parents, she moved into an apartment in Madison House. The apartment was not too far from her father's pub, the 108 in Rathgar. Now in her mid-30s, Eva wanted her own bit of independence. And to have this, she felt she needed to move out of the family home and get her own place. The apartment was on the first floor of Madison House on the Rathgar Road, overlooking the street, and had 1 bedroom. The area was known to be a safe place to live and was generally quiet. Exactly what Eva was looking for. She was also not too far from the church, which was an important factor for Eva. Eva's parents, as I said, were instrumental in finding this apartment for Eva, as they wanted to ensure that she would be, number one, in a safe area, and number two, Eva had suffered from depression from the age of 16, so the fact that this apartment was only about a 15-minute walk from the family home gave her parents a bit of reassurance. In essence, it worked out for everybody. Eva had her independence, but was also within walking distance of home. She had been in the mental health services system, but from my research, it appears she wasn't under any medical care at the time she would disappear. She'd allegedly attended St. Patrick's Hospital, but again, I can't confirm if this was as an outpatient or whether she'd spent time there as an inpatient. But she was prescribed antidepressants at the time she was attending. Eva found great comfort in her religion, and her deep faith would help her in her darkest of hours. Her family would not share the same high regard for religion, but respected Eva's beliefs. Eva would be seen attending Mass every morning and attending evening prayer meetings each evening. She would visit her parents also every day and would have lunch with them. As I said, a creature of routine. The morning of Sunday, the 25th of July, it is assumed Eva headed to Mass at St. Joseph's in Terranure, but which service she attended, if at all, was never verified. But she did walk to the family home to visit her parents between approximately 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. They lived in Ratdown Park in Terranure. Some of her siblings were also at the house that Sunday. The family were all going to sit down together for lunch. Eva was seemingly disappointed by what was on the menu that day, lamb roast, and was not shy at expressing her displeasure. This caused her brother to intervene and words were exchanged. Eva would not back down and Julie got up and left the house in a strop. Eva was prone to little outbursts and could be strong-minded and difficult at times, but her family knew her form. Moments like these are normal among families, and I'm sure when she did walk out, her family were certain she would cool off on the walk home and that they would see her as usual the following day. As I said, her family were a great support, not only financially, but emotionally to Eva when it came to her mental health. But they did not entertain her mini meltdowns over trivial matters. And usually Eva would calm down and return in time like nothing had happened. So they thought nothing of her overreaction. But this time, when Eva got up and marched out the door, unfortunately, it would be the last time her family would ever see her. Monday, the 26th, started normally for Eva's parents. They were expecting her over at lunchtime as usual, but Eva was a no-show at lunch. Her dad, Davy, was becoming concerned and he rang her siblings to see if any of them had heard from her. They had not. Worry really started to set in when again on Tuesday Eva did not turn up for lunch. Her father decided to go over to the apartment at Medicine House to check up on his daughter. He rang the doorbell, but Eva did not answer. He left and returned later with one of the barmen from the 108. He rang the doorbell again, but again was met with silence. But this time he wasn't leaving. He wasn't leaving without finding out what had happened to Eva. So with the help of the barman, they gained entry to the apartment by smashing a window. Everything looked as it should when they got in. There was no sign of a struggle. But Eva was not in her apartment. Her father did notice the raincoat she had been wearing on Sunday was on the chair, which obviously would suggest that Eva had made it back to her apartment that Sunday. But her handbag, keys and her money were gone. Eva had a pink tracksuit on the Sunday when she visited her parents. That also was not in the apartment. So I suppose it's safe to assume, but not definitive, that Eva was wearing it when she went missing. Now, with his anxieties at breaking point, Eva's father went straight to the Garda station in Terranure. But Gardaí, according to the family, were slow to react. While they did take the initial missing person statement from Davy, it appears they assumed, because Eva had a history of depression, she had done the unthinkable to herself, a fact her family vehemently deny. Eva was, after all, a staunch Catholic, and in the Catholic religion, ending your own life is classed as a mortal sin. Secondly, her body has never been located, and her family are adamant that despite her past, Eva was content. She loved her family and the life she had created, and would never put her family through such grief. Gardaí had also allegedly told Eva's family that she was an adult and was entitled to leave without alerting her family if she so wished, and would likely return soon. They also said that there was no evidence that a crime had occurred. How they came to this conclusion without investigating is a real head-scratcher. So precious time in the immediate aftermath was again lost due to Garda inactivity. So, despite the missing persons report being made by her father, Gardaí did not immediately issue a missing persons alert to the public, probably because of the reasons I just stated. Her father would have to pull a few strings with the Fianna Fáil party, of which he was a member, to get the then Taoiseach, Albert Reynolds, to put pressure on the Gardaí to start investigating. His persistence did pay off, and Gardaí, over a month later, did try and retrace Eva's last known movements. But nothing could be 100% verified. There was not much CCTV footage in the area, given it was the early 1990s, and not many witnesses were coming forward with information. Gardaí were confident she had attended church the morning of the 25th before heading to her parents' house. Despite the fact that there was a church near her apartment in Rakar, Eva continued to attend the church in Terenure, which was halfway between her apartment and her parents' house. As I said, she liked to keep her routines. It is assumed, but again, not 100% verified, that Eva was wearing the pink tracksuit with leggings, a man's wristwatch with a brown strap, and had a red leather handbag with her because it was missing from the apartment. Eva was approximately 5'7" and of slim build with blue eyes and short brown hair cropped into a bob at the time of her disappearance. Searches of areas around Terenure, Ratgar and Ratfarnham were carried out, and these also included local canals, with Gardaí still not ruling out the suicide theory, despite her family being adamant this was not the case. Eva's passport was also still in her apartment, as were all her clothes, and when her bank account was checked, it was discovered that it had not been touched since prior to the 25th of July. Her family never believed she ran away either, saying she would have left a note. It just wasn't in her character to do something like that. Now, because it was over a month since Eva's disappearance before Gardaí took a proper interest, and not realising the significance of what they were doing, in the intervening time, Eva's family had allegedly cleaned her apartment. This, of course, meant that any potential evidence may have been cleaned away by her well-meaning family. So when Gardaí inspected the apartment, there was nothing to be found. This, of course, meant that any potential evidence may have been cleaned away by her well-meaning family when Gardaí inspected the apartment. This has been disputed by her family, though, who say they did not clean her apartment for at least a year after she disappeared, while Gardaí say when they inspected the apartment, 3 months after her disappearance, it had already been cleaned. I personally can't see the family cleaning the apartment before Gardaí inspected it, especially knowing Eva had been back there after she left the family home. But who is telling the correct version of events, I do not know. There is a lot of dispute as to when it was cleaned and when it was forensically tested by Gardaí. But all I can say is her family were desperate for answers. So potentially disturbing evidence and a potential crime scene does seem like an odd thing to do in this situation. But then again, we weren't as forensically minded, I suppose, back in 1993. Now, as I said, the family were really disgruntled by the pace at which the investigation was going and were despairing at the lack of progress. So they decided to hire a private investigator for a 4-month period, as they were convinced Eva had come to some sort of harm at the hands of someone else. But this did not bring any new information to the table. Unlike a lot of the cases that I have covered, Eva's case was not publicised widely in the national media initially and over the subsequent years. This was another real blow for the family. So the family took it upon themselves to organise searches, hand out posters and put out appeals over the years. They discovered 2 address books belonging to Eva and contacted everyone that was in them to see if they had seen Eva, but nobody had. Her sister Colette would say in a News Talk interview years later that her father was not a man that liked to ask for favours. But he was at the end of his tether, so he did seek out the help of Albert Reynolds. And that did initially spur on the Gardaí into doing their job, albeit 3 months later. But then there was a change in Taoiseach, and this apparently meant a change in the pace of the investigation again. Garda appeals that had been done on a yearly basis on the date of her disappearance went to every 5 years and eventually to every 10 years. Okay, guys, we're just going to take a brief break to help fuel future episodes. Don't go anywhere. Now, a lot of mystery surrounds Eva's disappearance. What time did she get back to her apartment on that Sunday? When did she leave again? Was it her decision to leave? Or was she taken against her will? Did she meet with foul play while out walking? So many questions. Eva would have walked that day through busy streets from her parents' home to her apartment. There are numerous pubs and restaurants along the route, not to mention cars. But yet, not one person has come forward to say they saw her out walking that day. This was Eva's home territory. She'd been raised in the area, a well-known face, and as I keep stressing, a person of exceptional routine. Was someone stalking her? Not to mention her family in general would have been well-known in the community, especially her father, as a publican with two well-known pubs. He was a member of the Fianna Fáil party and very well connected in the horse racing world. Beggars belief that not one single person saw her walking home that day or subsequently when she must have left her apartment either later that Sunday or on the Monday. Now, as far as relationships go, there's not much information about relationships that Eva would have had. But I did see that she had two boyfriends in the past, but she was not overly enthusiastic about having a relationship. And that both relationships did end. All in all, Eva led an unassuming life. She attended church, went to her prayer group and spent time with her friends and her family. Not really a recipe for gathering enemies, you would think. The theories of her running away or ending her life seem far-fetched. So that just leaves the theory that she was abducted and murdered. I personally believe this theory to be the more accurate one. Did someone that knew Eva, maybe a casual acquaintance, call to her apartment and lure her out under some false pretense? That would also explain why no signs of a struggle were noticed by the family in the apartment. This is only a theory, but it does seem plausible. By all accounts, Eva was a cautious person, so the likelihood of her leaving the apartment for a stranger are very slim indeed. There is a lot generally wrong with this case and how the investigation was conducted, if you compare it to other high-profile cases, from the delayed response from An Garda Síochána, to the fact that this poor response was allegedly down to the fact that Eva had mental health issues and was basically stigmatised because of it, with the assumption from the start that she had ended her own life or taken the decision to just disappear, and working under the assumption adults have the right to go missing if they choose. The family have been rightly critical of the Gardaí for this, as it must be so frustrating that your loved one is missing and the people that are supposed to be helping you find her have a preconceived notion of what happened to her without investigating. Their concerns were not taken seriously. I would have assumed that a person suffering from mental health issues would have been prioritised and categorised as a vulnerable missing person. Because of this lacklustre start to the investigation, potential evidence, as I said, that could have been preserved was lost. No public appeal for information was initially made in those critical early days, so potential witnesses who may have seen Eva were not encouraged to come forward. It was only because of the Brennan family's persistence over time that the media started to take notice, and even that coverage over the years has been patchy. You'd also wonder that the fact that Eva's case did not dominate the headlines like other high-profile cases, and there wasn't the scrutiny of the public on the Gardaí to get answers, did this also feed into the lack of major drive to solve the case? Eva's sister Colette appeared on an RTE documentary called True Lives in 1998, but more heartache was to beset the family in the following years. Davy Brennan died at the age of 81 from stomach cancer in 2001. Then her sister Colette died in 2015, having campaigned for years on her sister's behalf. And then her mother Eileen died in 2019. On the 30th anniversary of Eva's disappearance in July 2023, RTE featured her story, but again no witnesses or information was forthcoming. Ex-Detective Sergeant of the Garda Cold Case Unit, Alan Bailey, said, I have always considered Eva as one of the forgotten missing persons. If you ask anyone who disappeared in 1993, they'll always mention Annie, but Eva seems to be forgotten. So how do I conclude such a sad case? Eva's case did not have the same intense Garda or media attention other missing persons cases had. Annie's been a prime example, who had only disappeared in March of 1993. All cases deserve the same attention from Gardaí and the media. Were the Gardaí resources stretched so much from the intensity of the Annie McCarrick investigation that they just didn't have the resources to put into looking for Eva? There are no definitive leads. We don't know exact or even approximate times for Eva's movements. We don't even know for sure if she attended church that morning. We can hazard a guess because of her routine that more than likely she did. We also don't know what time she got back to her apartment or when she left it. From people I've spoken to about this case, I have been told, as I said already, that this stretch of road she would have walked on was extremely busy. It was always busy. There were always cars in it, always people walking, didn't matter what time of the day or night. It goes from residential into business with all the restaurants and pubs and back to residential again. How did no one not see Eva at any stage when she left her parents to returning home or in the subsequent days if she left the apartment again? Did she take another route when she was going home? Did she accept a lift? Was she abducted from the roadside? Again, no witnesses. Did someone call to her apartment and pick Eva up in their car? Eva deciding she did not need her coat as she'd be in the car. Had she a stalker? Someone in her prayer group maybe? Of course, it's all just surmising. Another theory emerged in 2016, this time from renowned broadcaster Garth O'Callaghan, who happened to be a distant cousin of Philip Kearns, who disappeared in 1986. And I covered Philip's case in a previous podcast as well. Garth O'Callaghan put forward a disturbing hypothesis that Eva Brennan and Philip Kearns were both victims of a powerful paedophile ring operating in South Dublin in the 1980s and 1990s. According to O'Callaghan, this network was allegedly comprised of individuals of high standing within the local community, including influential figures in respected professions. These were not faceless criminals, but people deeply embedded in the social fabric, trusted, admired, and perhaps most disturbingly, protected. O'Callaghan's claims suggest that Eva may have uncovered or learned something about this network that put her in grave danger, leading to her disappearance. Allegations of a cover-up have circulated for years, with whispers that investigations were suppressed, evidence overlooked, and powerful connections used to ensure that these criminals remained hidden. The theory raises unsettling questions about how much was known by authorities and whether fear or influence allowed the perpetrators to avoid justice. While these claims remain unproven, the parallels between Eva's and Philip's disappearance are difficult to ignore. Both vanished within a few miles of each other, in areas where this alleged ring was rumoured to operate. Both were allegedly part of the same prayer group and would have been known to each other. Eva was said to have been very upset when Philip disappeared. While these theories and speculation have emerged over the years, there's no concrete evidence or verified reports connecting Eva to this ring. So this subject has to be approached sensitively. So I choose not to put any names here in the podcast of people suspected of being in this ring. But their names are out there if you do choose to Google the subject. All I can say from everything I've read and researched is that Eva's case is no further ahead from an investigation standpoint than it was in 1993. Her family have spent decades seeking justice, navigating the frustration of investigative shortcomings and the weight of these unverified theories. What is clear is that Eva's life did not simply vanish. It was interrupted, and the circumstances of that interruption have yet to be understood. Whether Eva's disappearance was connected to a wider criminal network or was an isolated incident, the need for the truth remains the same. Her family deserve answers, not speculation. Eva's case deserves the same thorough, timely investigation as other high-profile cases have got. Unfortunately, that did not happen, and Eva is still missing. So I call on anyone with any information on the disappearance of Eva Brennan on the 25th of July 1993 to please contact Terenure Garda Station on 01-666-6400 or the Garda Confidential Line on 1-800-666-111. Or alternatively, you can call the Missing Persons Helpline on 1-800-442-552. You can also email the National Missing Persons Helpline at office@nmph.ie, or you can just contact your local Garda station.
So guys, that's it for today's episode of the Ireland Crimes and Mysteries podcast. Again, thanks for your listenership, and don't forget to subscribe to the show and hit that auto download so you never miss an episode. Until the next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. This podcast has been compiled from information gathered in the public sphere, like news articles, documentaries, and open source material that can be found on the web. Everything in this podcast is alleged unless a conviction has taken place.
You've been listening to Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. Join Newell's for another episode coming real soon. And keep up to date by following our social media sites, our YouTube channel, and our website, islandcrimesandmysteries.ie.